Blog Talk Radio.
Miss Tammy's TKO Radio Show. Mystique Entertainment, a global network for your top source for live streaming continuous content such as music, film, trade shows, lifestyles, and wellness and reality shows. For business inquiries, contact Mystique Entertainment. Info mystiqueentertainment@gmail.com.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of eWater Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of eWater Radio, KEWR, DB, or its affiliates.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to Miss Tammy's TKO Radio Show on eWater Radio, KEWR, DB, where I will feature the hottest topics in regards to nutrition, sports, and fitness. Now, before I interview my special guest that I'm so excited about tonight, I want to give a big shout out to all the March birthdays out there. There are a lot of them. Oh, my gosh. There were a lot of babies born in March. So I want to give a shout out to Delia, Mary Jane, Mickey, Dr. Scott, Kimball, Adam, George, Kim, Dawn, Stella Monica. Happy birthday, my friends. I hope that your day was extra amazing despite the circumstances right now. You know, you got to make the best of it, right? You got to make the best of it. You got to do something that makes you happy. Even if you're restricted, still got to do something that makes you happy. Also, a very special birthday shout out to my little princess who is about to turn 7 in 2 weeks. It breaks my heart that I had to cancel her birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese because that's probably, it's not going to happen. And so that forces me to go ahead and get creative. And a lot of great friends have given me some cool advice about how to, you know, make that creative. I know there's like FaceTime princesses because, you know, we're probably going to be indoors by ourselves, you know, celebrating her birthday. So anybody that has any good ideas, please message me, direct message me at Reese119 on my Instagram. Let me know if you have any ideas of how I can make my little munchkin happy on her birthday. Also, I want to give a shout out to all the heroes out there that are working through this coronavirus pandemic, who are covering the news, making tests for the virus. You know, all the teachers out there that are developing lesson plans online, that's a lot of work. I used to be a teacher. I know it's incredibly hard. I just totally sympathize with you on that, empathize. All the cops patrolling the streets out there, the doctors, the nurses caring for patients, everybody out there serving seniors and children, the volunteers, people that are working at grocery stores, drive-thrus. All of y'all are all my heroes. I know there's way more than I just mentioned. You are all heroes. You're all leaders. I honor you, and my hat goes off to you for your commitment to be of service to the community in a time like this. And next, I want to give a shout-out to Donovan McIntosh, who was on my show, my last show. He really rocked it. And I really appreciate all the great information that he spoke on. In case you missed his show on how to get shape past your prime or in your prime, please check out eWater Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and go under Miss Tammy and check out that episode with Donovan. I want to say it's really important what he's talking about. Staying in shape is incredibly important during a time like this. Staying physically active is definitely the business. And so I'm looking to our leaders out there, Donovan McIntosh, Tracy, all of our fitness gurus out there, how can we stay in shape at home? Because if we're not allowed to leave, what do we do? Last night, I got to say, I went walking for like 45 minutes around the neighborhood. And then I went and rode my stationary bike for 30 minutes and then lifted some weights. And I got to tell you, I felt so much better. I felt good. I woke up feeling good as well. It makes a difference. We got to stay physically active, even though a lot of us can't go to the gym right now. So it's important. So with that, I want to go ahead and jump right into the interview with professional MMA fighter, pro boxing and MMA trainer, and gym and multiple business owner, entrepreneur, Mr. Antonio McKee. Are you on the line, Antonio? Are you there?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing tonight? Can you hear me? Antonio, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, cool. How you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm good. Am I live?
You are live right now, my friend.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know if my connection was strong or not. You know, I got a lot of interference over here, but I live right by the airport. But, hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, first things first, I got to say happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm like 20 years old now.
I know, 21 again, 21 again.
All over again.
All over again. Hey, I understand you just got back from the East Coast, right?
Yeah, we had a fight out there with Bellator. Kimbo Slice Jr. was fighting, and Bellator called the show off for the safety of the fighters, and so we didn't get a chance to fight, but they, I mean, I was really surprised. They took care of us, covered everything, and then the fighters got paid. So that was really an amazing thing to see Scott Coker do. So shout out to Bellator Nation and Scott Coker. They did an amazing job by compensating the fighters, even though they could have let us fight. They could have allowed us to fight, but they chose not to. They thought it would be more safer. And, you know, it's very rare you see an organization that looks out for fighters like that.
That's amazing. That really is amazing. And that just shows, you know, that's a good organization to work for because, you know, they're taking care of you guys, you know, through this whole deal. Did you experience any craziness at the airport? I mean, you kind of came back like right before it got super crazy at the airports. What did you experience there?
Well, we walked right through. I mean, I think the world is making this. Social media, like Donald Trump says, you know, they have a tendency to put a lot of extras on stuff. I know we have to respect it, but it's not as bad as people think it is. But I don't know really what the agenda of our government is right now. I'm pretty familiar with the coronavirus. So if you want to talk about that, we can talk about that too. But we didn't have any problems. We got right on the plane and we got right off. And I know right after we left, they put New York under quarantine. I don't know. My personal opinion, I think it's something different, bigger than what we're actually being told, because I think if people do their homework and they study this virus, it's not what they're making it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know I hear a lot of different opinions out there about it and all that good stuff, but you know, I want to talk about something better, because every time we turn on the news, every time we turn on the TV, every time we turn around, everybody's talking about this thing. So let's lighten people's load tonight, and let's put a smile to people's face. I want people to know about you, Antonio, because you have such an amazing story. So I want to talk about your journey. First off, you know, where are you from?
Well, I'm originally born in Dayton, Ohio, and my mother was pursuing entertainment and the music industry. And so then I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, where my mother left, and when she left there, I stayed because of the type of work she was doing, and I lived in Nashville for, I mean, it was about 1982, and then after 1982, I came to California. Before traveling from California, getting to California, I went to Atlanta, I went to Alabama, Then I settled in with my mom, actually, in the end, and here in California, Long Beach.
And so I've been here. That's a lot of moving around.
Well, Mama was a rolling stone. Wherever she laid her head was her home.
Nice. Was that hard kind of growing up, though? Like, yeah. But, you know, like moving and going to different schools and that kind of stuff, was that tough? Or do you feel like it kind of shaped you into being able to, you know, be able to be outgoing and meet new people and all that kind of stuff?
Well, you know what? I think it did, of course, shape me into being who I am today. But there's nothing like stability. And, you know, I try to provide that with my kids, although my mindset is move around. But I think, yeah, it was definitely difficult. I had to make some adjustments early at a young age. I had to be responsible for, you know, things that most kids my age didn't have to be responsible for. I had to step up to the plate. And I did a pretty good job at it because I'm still here and I'm still kicking.
But nice. And that's what it's all about. Had to be. And it had to be kind of inspirational, though, too, to see, you know, your mom doing something that she loved and pursued her passion, right? That's kind of cool, too, in itself, right?
Yeah, you know what? It played a role in how I moved today, you know, watching her grind. And it was so tough back in the time era that she was doing what she was doing. For a female alone, Afro-American, to do what she was doing. But, you know, she did well enough to bring me up to understand and do what's right. You know, I'm not running the streets. I'm not in jail. You know, I'm trying to keep things together.
Yeah, and that you are. So how did you get into mixed martial arts through all this?
Well, you know, when I was younger, you know, I came up, it was a very troubled youth for me, making adjustments in different homes, in and out of boys' homes. You know, the story that most kids' nightmare is, you know, being molested and the things that I had to go through and adversity that I had to face. It was difficult for me to make those adjustments at such a young age. And I just was so angry as a child, I wanted to fight. And I always fought, and I fought, and I fought, and I fought. And that was kind of like my M.O., is that I was known for fighting all the time. And, you know, eventually fighting led into a professional sport for me. It was just part of growing up in the ghetto. You know what I mean? It was rough. It was rough. But I made the adjustments, and, you know, fighting finally paid off because I became a professional fighter.
Nice. But you started out wrestling, from what I understand, right? Like in high school?
Yeah. Okay, well, T, you know I can talk all night, but so how much time do I got? And then I can break it all down for you really quick. I can drop it
off. No, you got time.
Okay.
You got time, okay. My friend. You got like a whole hour on all this stuff. So I got a lot of questions for
man.
You, but you can, you know, break it down. I want to know your background.
Okay.
I want to know how you got into mixed martial arts and wrestling, all that.
Okay, so, you know, it started out, Mom, it was rough life. I lived in the ghetto. I tell people to Google where I used to live, University Courts, Nashville, Tennessee. Just, if you've got time, Google University Courts, Nashville, Tennessee. I lived in those projects. At the time, the rent was like $48, $50 a month. I used to go down to the river and catch fish because we were so poor, and my grandmother was trying to raise me and everybody else's kids in the ghetto. And so I had to make a lot of adjustments, and I had to be a man at a very young age. I've watched murder after murder, and that kind of messed me up because growing up in those projects, it was like a big horseshoe, one way in, one way out. People would die there daily. The things that I saw on a regular, I grew so numb to murder and pain and suffering because that was an everyday life for me. As I started to get older and moving up into, you know, high school, actually junior high, I was a troubled youth. I couldn't stop fighting. I was in and out of trouble. Just the things that I had been exposed to, and then the molestation, being molested for 2 or 3 years. Like, psychologically, I don't think I had the answers, but I think God had a spirit over me. There had to be something to take over me, to just maneuver me through, because I was headed for, you know, self-destruction, death. I was ready to die. I didn't care about living. I didn't care about killing. And so the next 5, 6, 7 of my years, I spent in and out of boys' homes, being seen by doctors for psychiatric evaluation, trying to see what was wrong with me. And, you know, I think now that I understand it, I had for sure PTSD, but as a child experiencing these things, you don't know how to explain, you don't know how to talk about it, so I acted it out. I was extremely violent to other kids. I was a threat to other classmates. I couldn't be left alone without being supervised. And a lot of this was just me expressing what I had seen, the trauma that I had seen, the things that had happened to me, whether I had a knife or a pretend gun or a broom handle, because I was beat with a broom, I was beat with clothes hangers, I was beat with extension cords. I didn't have that sensitivity to pain like most kids do. So you had to go over and beyond. Then it got so bad, I was placed in a hospital for psychiatric evaluation. The thing that kept me alive and kept me pushing was that I was really smart. And they would always give me these tests. And these tests, I would score like 100%, which was at the time, I guess, that was unheard of. You don't score 100% on a psychology test. But I was really consistent. And the brain activity that I had was extremely fast. I was very quick thinking. I could process things. I could solve puzzles. I remember some of the tests. I was so able to do on the left, on the right. And so they discovered that, you know, hey, this kid's really intelligent. We need to observe him even more. So I stayed there. They created a point system. One is poor, two is fair, three is good, four is excellent. And if I had 12 points by the end of the week, which is Friday, I would get to go home. I don't think I ever went home. I was there for about 6-7 months. And then at that point, I was getting into it with the staff. And you're talking about a 12-year-old kid. I was 12 years old when this stuff was going. And then they were talking about killing me, trying to make me go swimming at night where they could drown me under the pool. It just, like, there was just an angel over me telling me and guiding me through the things that I was dealing with. And I would always listen to that voice in my head. Or was it really a voice? I really don't know, because when I used to tell them there was someone talking to me, telling me what was going on, that's when I became, okay, this kid is crazy. I remember the doctor saying, no, there's nothing wrong with this kid. He's really intelligent. He's just got some serious trauma. And I remember the doctor that came in. He looked at me. He was an African doctor. He had all white on. He had the nappiest hair I ever seen. He had these thick-ass glasses. And he said to me and to the committee, because at this point the state had had enough, they were about to award me to the state, life in a mental institution, fully medicated, and award me away. They told my mother that I had some serious medical issues and that she needed to sign her rights over to the state for me. And my mother didn't do it. And I remember in the meeting, and, you know, this is a child, and I don't even remember certain parts of this really strong. I remember that doctor saying in front of the court that this kid has two options. He can either be something that we don't want to see, or he'll be something that's greater than what we've seen. And I use that to this day, and I'm 50 years old to this day. I use that from the time I recalled it, I think from 14 all the way to today. I use that as a tool guide to make the right decisions, because one split of a second can make the difference of you dying, living, or spending the rest of your life in the joint. So I bring that back. So at this point now, I'm about 15 now, 15 years old. They ship me out. They say, well, maybe the kid needs to be with his mom, because at that time I was disconnected from my parents. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was trying to do what she was trying to do to make ends meet as a single mother raising two kids in California with no trade. She left home when she was 14 years old, pregnant with me. And that was a good move, because back then in the South, if you got pregnant with a child, the state would take the child from the mother. And she didn't want to lose me, so she ran away, forced her, got fake IDs. I mean, she did what she had to do to survive. And, you know, I'm grateful for such a strong mother. But now I'm 15. I'm back in California. I'm with my mother. I'm mad as hell. I don't have a clue to what's going on in the real world, because I've been away for so long in this private facility. I'm now with my mom. I'm about to start ninth grade. And I somehow stumbled into a little trouble in California with the gangs and stuff, that when I was growing up here was really different, because I had never saw an Asian or a Mexican. All I knew was black and white. So now I'm being introduced to like many cultures, cultural people and different lifestyles. And so making these harsh adjustments in an era of where my mindset is totally different than the average 15-year-old. I remember sitting at a bus stop. A guy said, "Hey, man, do you box?" And at the time, I wanted to fight. And I was boxing at a gym called Seaside. I know a lot of people that know that gym were like, wow, that's old school. Then I went to Muhammad Ali's gym. He had a gym in Long Beach on 7th and Long Beach Boulevard, for all those who know Long Beach, back in the 80s. So I was there, and they wouldn't let me fight. I wanted to fight. I didn't know at the time I was harvesting this anger, this pain, this hurt, this suffering, this childhood wounds of just everything could possibly go wrong, because I don't recall good things. I only remember all the bad, the killing, the murders, the killing, the raping, the women being raped in front of my eyes. Just, I don't even understand how this place still exists. To this day, you can Google it, it's still there. So now I'm I think at this point I'm having a breakdown, but I'm not aware of it. And I remember getting in trouble in California, and the judge was about to throw the book. And there was this guy that said, "I want you to wrestle." Thing. I didn't know about, you know, a grown-ass man putting on singlets and getting in his tight uniform and wrestling with another man. I didn't come from that era of that lifestyle, or nor did I have any idea of that. So I was like, "Well, is it like a fight?" He's like, "Yeah, it's like a fight." And I said, "Well, I think I can kick anybody's ass in there." You know, I was a very cocky kid. And he's like, "Well, come into the gym." So I go in there, ninth grade, I started wrestling, and I got my ass whooped by the littlest dude in the gym. Now, I'm knocking and beating on grown men. How do I lose to a little Filipino skinny kid? I could not understand it, so I went back again, and I went back again, and he just kept kicking my ass, and I said, "You know what? I'm going to do this until I can beat this guy." Within a year, by the end of my ninth grade year, he was catching the blues, and he was the team captain. I did not know that. At the time, they put me against the toughest guy in the gym, but he was a lightweight guy because I was a little guy. Well, before you know it, I became a three-time state champion. I won three California state titles, six total, freestyle, three, high school, 1 year, 2 years of college. There was something that clicked about my sophomore year, and this is going to sound so crazy. I had a counselor. I got a referral for chewing gum. I went into the office with the referral, and he looked at me. And he said, excuse my language because this is not my daily language, but he said, "Motherfucker, what are you doing in my fucking office for chewing some fucking gum?" And I looked at him because no one ever talked to me like that. I looked at him, and he said, "Get your ass in my office." I sat down in his office. His name was Mel Collins. Anybody that knows Long Beach Poly knows Mel Collins. He's the gatekeeper, the principal, and everything else. So I sat down in his office, and he said, "Look at me." He said, "You're one of the best athletes we got in this school, and you're getting a referral for chewing. Come in my office again." And I don't know what it was, but at that point, if you study my history in high school, I never got in trouble again. And all it took was someone to cuss me out. I don't know if it was him cussing me out where I actually hurt him, or it was just time I made the change. But whatever I did, whatever he did, it worked. And me and him are still friends to this day. He's about 80 years old now, and he's healthy, living out in San Diego, and I call him periodically just to check on him, make sure he's doing good, and he's still got all his wits. But at that point, I made a change. And from there on, I went straight to the top. I just didn't get a chance to graduate because at that time, I was so caught up in studying history, politics, religion, and I couldn't pass U.S. government history because I didn't believe in the history that was being taught. So I rebelled against the Long Beach Unified School District that I refused to pass U.S. government history. But with my accomplishments, they gave me another chance, and I stood strong in what I believed, and I said, "I'm not taking the test. This book is a lie, and it's not true, so I don't feel that I need to learn this in order to move on." And I dropped out of high school, and I went to college. I rode in college. That's where I captured the two state championship titles there. I went undefeated 2 years, the only wrestler to ever do that. And I did this alone. Had I had a father like the father that I am, I probably would have been an Olympian because the sky was the limit for me. It was more like whatever I put my mind to, I was able to do it. And even with all the pain, but I think what I was also doing is I was covering up the pain of my childhood by the physical act of hurting somebody else, because let me tell you, it wasn't a pleasure to wrestle me. I tried to break an arm, a leg, whatever I could do to hurt somebody. I was trying to hurt them. And then there was a point where I became good. I became good at what I was doing, and I started to have compassion for people whose father was there. And then this emotional breakdown, like, I'm the best there is in the world right now, and there's no one here. I don't think my mom ever came and watched me wrestle once. It was always just me. And I created this character, and I would always talk to this character about, like, I'm the best. No, you're not the best. Nobody can beat you. And I'm like, no, I'm telling you, I'm the best. Watch, I'm going to go out here, and I'm going to shock everybody. And I'd talk crap to everybody. I would create such hype to that character that I didn't want to lose to that character, which I created to be the best. And so, you know, that was pretty much it in the middle part of my life, because in the process of all of that, there was a lot of going to jail, getting out of jail, going to jail, getting out of jail, going to jail, getting out of jail, maybe 13, 14 times. Stupid stuff, irresponsible, no driving, no driver's license, 5 tickets, failure to pay, failure to appear, $30,000 traffic warrants, possession of stolen property, walking on the wrong side of the street, flipping a cop off. Just, you know, the stupid stuff that happens in low-income areas when police are targeting certain type of people. It was very easy to spot me because I stuck out like a sore thumb. I really didn't fit the area that I was in, but I was in the area. So, you know, with all that, I continued to pursue being successful independently. I became a business owner. A lot of people thought I sold drugs. I never sold drugs. I was a hard-ass worker. If you ever seen me, you knew I worked for every nickel and dime that I got. I opened up a stereo shop. I did sound systems for Snoop, Warren, G, Nate Dogg, all the rappers in Long Beach. I used to hook their cars up with the loud music. And I took that money and turned it into communication stores. I owned 4 communication stores at that time. Life was like a maze for me. And I was more turned on by the things that people said I couldn't do, by the things that I was doing. And I got a lot more of what I couldn't do. So I did what I could, and I make sure that I tied it into everything that they said I couldn't do. I think a lot of that, my success was to prove other people wrong, to prove other people that they couldn't make opinions about me because I was in control, not realizing that I probably had an angel over me because I was in and out of those streets. I've dealt with some of California's number one gangsters, number one drug dealers, number one killers, from that to military guys. Like, I have seen it all. And had my hands in some part of a portion of it, legal or illegal. And then, you know, after I left college, I opened up retail stores. And then when those went out, I started fighting. And that's how I got into MMA. I coached high school at the age of 19 for extra money. From 19 to 22, I coached and went to college. And then I started to really understand how this works. You know, I've dated some nice ladies in my life, and a lot of them just was so hurt by my past, arm out for me. And for me, that was more like, I don't need your sympathy. So I was in a situation where they probably really loved me, but because I didn't know how to receive love and I didn't understand love because things were so difficult, I rejected it, and I hurt a lot of people because I did not understand the emotion that they were trying to teach me and tell me about. It just didn't exist to me until I had kids. Then I said, is this what it's like? Is this what it's like? Like, the way I feel for my son? And that young man today is, what, 16-0 in MMA? And not only that, he saved my life, because when he was born, I was 25, and I had to make a decision. Do I want to live this life that I'm living, or do I want to be here for this little kid? And I swear to you, he was an angel, because he used to say stuff to me that made no sense. He would say things like, God doesn't want this. And I'm like, how do you know who God is at 3-4 years old? He would say things like, Daddy, God doesn't like it when you talk like that. Daddy, God doesn't like it when you go with those guys. And I know what guys those were, but I ain't going to say it on the radio. I want them to come get me. But I knew what he was talking about. And so I wouldn't go. I would stay with him because he would scream, cry, phone call the next day. They got shot. They got killed. Or they got picked up by the police. And everybody started dying off. And I just stayed with my son more and more and more. And then I would talk to him about life. And he was like somebody else at 6 years old, but yet something was talking through him, because there is no way he could tell me the things he would tell me. And I just stayed focused on that. And he taught me about, like, money is not important. Because I would ask him stuff like, hey, son, you know, what do you enjoy the most? What's the best time you've ever had? He says, you know, Dad, I don't remember the things you bought me, but I remember we used to go to the park and throw baseballs, and we would go to Jack in the Box. And that was when I had no damn money, and I couldn't afford to do anything else. So we would take the 99-cent Jack in the Box, you get two Jack in the Box 99-cent chicken sandwiches, and I get two glasses of water for 99 cents, and I would go collect aluminum cans and recycle them to get the 99-cent nasty-ass chicken sandwiches from Jack in the Box, and we would go to the park and just throw baseballs. And that's what he remembers to this day, not the cars, not the Cadillacs, not the loud music, not the jewelry. And so, you know what? I'm not materialistic at all, and he is.
Wow.
He's all about that.
Like, you know.
But we can go
on and on. Well, I mean, I really appreciate you sharing, you know, your story and really getting personal with us about everything, because, you know, there's other people out there listening that have went through similar trials and tribulations that can relate to what you're talking about. And, you know, the most important takeaway is that, you know, through all of this adversity, you managed to make it, and whatever that means, meaning, you know, get out of the life that you were living in and out of jail and become something and become a father, become a trainer, become a fighter, become a business owner, all the great things that you've accomplished in your life. You were able to get through just some crazy times that you went through. And I truly believe you touched on something. I really believe that we do have some angels among us that might not even be with you forever, just for a moment. Almost like that. Remember that old movie or that TV show, Highway to Heaven, with Michael Landon?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of dates me too. But it's like it's like an angel that kind of walked with you for a moment. And I feel like we had that. And that's kind of what I'm hearing you say, is that there are people along the way that kind of helped you. And I feel like that person that you were talking about, that principal or the instructor, the guy that had the jack of all trades at that school, I think what he gave you was structure. And I think that may be the thing that was missing from your life that you needed. You had somebody that put you in place and gave you a little bit of structure. And we need that. And that's what teachers and coaches and mentors are there to do. And do you think, the things that you went through and with that particular teacher, do you feel like that shapes you with you coaching now? Does that speak to you in the way that you coach the fighters that you're training today?
That's when this change started. There were so many people in and out of my life that influenced me. But at the time, I didn't acknowledge any of that. I was numb. I didn't get it. If it would have been any other way, I would not be here, because I would not have I wouldn't have accepted it, because it would have made sense. Nothing made sense. Nothing made sense at all. And so if it would have made sense, I wouldn't have done it, because it didn't make sense to me if it made sense. You know what I'm saying? I was so just way off on left kill. And I think a lot of people, and maybe I can help some people that are listening tonight, like, we block stuff out of our head to survive. The mind is amazing. Like, I have no degree, and I have broke down the body. I've studied kinesiology. I've studied brain activity and how the brain operates, the cellular level of the body. And we have an amazing gift. And it's called survival. And the brain will do this. The body will do this automatically. You don't have to tell it anything. And this is done off of an emotion, your nervous system. It knows when something's not right. All senses heighten in, and then these activities take place. So for me, I was an adrenaline junkie. The more entertaining and exciting it was, the more likely I could die from doing it. I was definitely guaranteed to do it. But I didn't know the importance of living. I didn't have anything to live for. So dying meant nothing to me. I would walk in front of the bullet if you shot it, just to see if I could die. And that's happened. And for some reason, it didn't kill me. I used to run across the freeway just to see if I could get across, like Frogger. And my friend got his whole body torn up because he went first. Normally I would always go first, but he went first. And we would race to see him get across. And I just looked, and I looked back, and all I saw was his body disappear through the closed casket. I never played that game again. But wow. There's so many people that have died in my life to where, question, why am I still here? So what I was saying about the brain is you'll block out a lot of stuff that will stop you from going forward, and you don't even realize that you're blocking it out. Like, I didn't remember that I was molested until I was like 19, 20. I was a nasty little boy running around thinking every girl wanted me, and I didn't realize that the problem was that I had been sexually violated, and when I remembered it, it was like a dream that I made up, and I would tell myself that didn't happen. But then I would ask myself, well, then why am I this way, you know, sexually? Why am I like this sexually? I don't understand. Everyone tells me they're doing this and they're doing that, but I'm so different. I'm doing this. And it wasn't a bad thing. It was actually a good thing. It probably saved me from all the things that I would have been doing that my friends were doing. I wouldn't do those things. So it's kind of funny how your body and your mind will release things when you're mature enough to handle them. And this is the crazy part. When you're talking spiritually, there's things that will go away, can't handle spiritually. And then all of a sudden, it comes back. And you have to ask yourself, why is this back? Or is this real? Don't question it. Just work through it. Because spiritually, you're now dialed in to receive it. That means you're able to accept it and you're able to make the changes. And I think I have a very different angle at helping people on a psychological level. You know, I come from a different angle. I'm not coming with your textbook and the theory of 1,000 people that did this equals this and this was that. And out of the statistics of this, this was the percentage of that. I'm actually coming from a real life experience. And I ask women all the time, and sometimes it's personal. I said, hey, have you ever been raped? Has a man ever just raped you that you don't know, a complete stranger? And if you haven't been raped, how can you tell me how this woman feels when another man's pain that she endured and the emotional part of it? To think that if she was to be intimate again with a guy that was hurting her, does it draw her back to being raped? Like, people don't have an idea unless they've experienced it. So I'm not against the educational book version, but I also like somebody with on-hand experience that actually worked through it and can help me get through it. It's unfortunately I didn't have anybody, and that's why I say the spiritual side kicks in, because I never talked to anybody about it. I was scared. And people go, well, why wouldn't you say anything? When stuff like that happens at such a young age, there's so much trauma behind it that you feel like you did something wrong. I was just afraid. I was in fear, and I blocked it out. So I just want people to know that have experienced stuff like that, you're starting to think these things, and they're starting to come clear and clear and clear. Times out of 10, something happened to you. Now let's go in and see if we can see. Now we can see it, we can heal, and we can fix it, and we can move on, and then we can let that be behind us. But we're the victims, and a lot of times we think that the other people were the victims, but we are truly the victims. But we're blessed on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I want to talk about, I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and I want to talk about all the different promotions that you fought for. You fought pretty impressive. I mean, you fought for King of the Cage, World Fighting Alliance, World Series of Fighting, Tokyo Sabres, and now you're currently in UFC, and now you're currently with Bellator MMA. What can you break down the differences between these? Because I'm a boxing. I like boxing. That, you know, it's just almost like skiing and snowboarding, right? And then you got boxing
right.
And MMA, and you know, and you're either one or the other, right? So
right.
Can you break this down to me in layman's terms, like what those different promotions were like?
Okay, in the beginning, this was illegal. Everybody knows it was banned. Okay, so then there was underground organizations that did it. And that's the underground organization is just like a promotion. And King of the Cage was one of the places that you could fight on Indian reservations because they had different laws on their land. So that's where it started originally, if it wasn't in a backyard. It was King of the Cage. So King of the Cage was one of the originals of MMA. And then other organizations start to do them on Indian reservations where it was allowed because they have different sanctioning bodies. So then there was other organizations. And then I think people saw the profits in it and the demand for it, and that's when the California Athletic Commission made it legal. But they made it under certain rules. And so people who had money, just like the boxing world, there were different promotions. That's all those different names were different promotions. And as you can see, none of them really last. And the USC, who is still currently here, and of course Bellator, which Scott Coker took that over. But all those different names were just promotions. That's it, just a different promotion. And I was one of the original pioneers when the UFC was done in the cage and there was no rules and it was called No Holds Barred. And I was one of the beginners of the sport. And so that's why I've been to all these different organizations, because I've stayed pretty healthy. I stayed away from steroids. I lived a really natural, holistic lifestyle. So even at this age now, at 50 years old, I can still fight. You know, I took really good care of myself. I was a boring fighter. I did what I had to do to strategically outmaneuver everybody and take no damage. And I can still fight to this day because of that. So I'm grateful for that. But yeah, that's the difference in the different organizations. It's just a different promotion with a different name.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, why did you make the switch from UFC to Bellator? Because I know UFC has a huge, huge name. I mean, so does Bellator, but what made you make that switch?
Well, okay. Well, you know, to be frankly honest, you know, coming up, I'm not the kind of guy that's an ass kisser. And so that's why I became independently financially successful, because I did not know how to work structurally for someone else. I'm my own boss. I was never put in a position to work for somebody. I believe that this is a free economy and I'm going to go get this money my way because I'm going to do my own thing. And it took a lot of suffering. So when I jumped into the fight game, at the time I was on Who's the Best Fighter. I didn't understand the business side of it like I do today because I own a promotional company. I didn't understand the business side. I just looked at it as I'm one of the best fighters, and why is the UFC not taking me when they know who I was? Dana White knew who I was. Everyone knew in the UFC who I was, but I never got a shot at it. Well, one, I had a little bit of too much of control of what I was doing. You know, I was my own manager. I was my own trainer. I was my own enemy. But, you know, I had other opportunities outside of the UFC. And I went undefeated for 7 years in MMA. If you go look at my history, and this is the sad part, a lot of people didn't know. And I was 155 pounds fighting 170, 175, 185, 195. And people wanted me to stand up and bang with guys 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 pounds heavier than me. It just wasn't smart. I was lucky to even win. But the USC did not like the type of talent that I was. I personally believe it was the fact that, you know, at that time, the way I felt about the USC is that I'm not an ass kisser and, you know, you don't got anybody that can beat me. I didn't realize all the other things that went along with the promotion. And, you know, I later on matured and, you know, I have my own peace with, you know, how that all turned out. But, you know, hey, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, that's fair enough. What are some of the biggest challenges that you face just in general as an MMA fighter? Like, who are, you know, your toughest opponents and the challenges of being in MMA?
You know, for me, my toughest opponent was me. My second toughest opponent was my wife at the time, my wife. I was in a different type of relationship. I was in a relationship with a Caucasian woman. And I'm straight from the ghetto, learning and growing. She's from Beverly Hills, Hollywood. And I didn't understand how to interact with her mindset with where I came from. So the biggest opponent was me, the lifestyle, the way I was brought up. That was the opponent. The cage was easy. That was where I just let it all go. I felt safe in there. I felt like, okay, no one can judge me when I'm in here. So I would say that. Now, on a physical level, I would say the toughest fight that I've had would probably been a wrestler under who is it? Dan Henderson. What is Dan Henderson? Dan Henderson's teammate, Heath Sims, and Jason Black, guy that was USC, Pat Militi's guy. These guys were wrestlers, and they were just as good as me in the cage, but I had a slighter edge of wrestling, and at the time I was self-trained. I remember those two fights right there. The rest of the fight, I don't even know where I was at when I was fighting, but I had a successful career. There was nothing to complain about. I mean, I enjoyed everything that I did, and I didn't do it for the money. I did it for the power of I be able to say that I'm one of the best.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, you know, I actually, one day, actually not one day, but one year, I actually signed up for a UFC gym just to see what it was like, you know, just because I've always boxed. And I went into the cage for the first time, and I was just like, my mouth dropped because, you know, when you're boxing, you know, you're in a square, and there's angles, you know, and you know, I had it all mapped out in the boxing ring. How to cut off the ring, this and that, right? But when you're in a cage, it's huge. So, my God, it's crazy, 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 crazy huge. So, you know, that to me was a big eye opener. And you know, what's your favorite move? Do you like submission or KO? What's your style like? I'm curious.
You know what? I would like. Hey, and everybody likes a knockout. I haven't gotten too many of those in my fighting career, but knockouts are the best because it feels good. It's something that, you know, it's a feeling you can't explain. I've been able to share those with my son. He's got about probably 10 of them. But, yeah, a knockout. And then working with Rampage, watching him knock people out and make that quick money, I think I like knockouts.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. At the end of the day, I mean, who doesn't like that, right?
Yeah.
So how did you get your nickname, Mandingo? You've never told me this. Like when I talked to you about this the other day, but I kind of skipped over it. But I want to know from you, how did you get that nickname?
Well, when I was little, the things I used to do, people said that I had special powers. So my first name. Nickname was Voodoo. They used to call me Voodoo, and I didn't even know what that meant at the time. Then as I got older, I understood what they meant. Like, I was just freaky weird. Like, you know what I mean? I could do whatever, and I was strong as a bull. So I started studying my history a lot. I really wanted to know who I came, where I came from, who was I, what were my ancestors like. And I started studying, and there was a tribe in Africa called the Mandingos, and they were fierce warriors. And no one talks about them in the history to this day. These were some very powerful ancient African warriors. And I was like, you know what? I want to be a Mandingo, a Mandingo warrior. Now, at the time, it's kind of funny because I had a wrestling program, and they were called Mandingo Warriors. And no one liked their kids wearing my uniform, so I changed it to Warriors. And I kept the name Mandingo. And, of course, you know, everybody thought because at the time I had a white wife, it was the black guy with the big penis. But that I wasn't named Mandingo because of that. Now, I could have took that name and ran with it for those reasons, but it was done before that was even known. Like, I didn't even understand, like, stuff like that. I didn't lose my virginity until I was, like, 17, going on 18 years old, called Mandingo back then. And it was just a fun nickname
awesome.
For me, you know what I mean? But yeah, it went the other way later. When I got to college, then it had another meaning.
I can imagine.
I became Umbutu de Mandingo from the Zulu tribe. Yaman. Me touch me roots.
Oh
my
goodness.
Yeah. So.
So I got to ask you, I mean, coaching and training as a fighter are totally two different things. And I think that that's so amazing that you actually do both. You coach and you train. And those are two different mindsets, two completely different mindsets. What do you like best? Do you like coaching or do you like fighting at this point in your life?
I like fighting. I will always fight. And my guys... The reason why they're so good, you know, I have to toot my own horn. And this is so funny. If you notice, a lot of a lot of black American men that don't get the recognition that they need. A lot of them in their younger ages, if you go back and you watch, they all have to toot their own horn because no one else will do it. It's almost like the world is so intimidated that if we realize that we know how good we are, we're going to do something any different than what we're doing. So a lot of times I have to toot my own horn to stay motivated. Not that I'm cocky, not that I'm full of myself, but if you understand that level of excellence no one can get to except the best in the world, you'll understand that alter ego that drives them to get there. And a lot of it is self-motivated. It's not the fans. The fans discourage us. People shoot us down. People are jealous of us. People want to be like us. People don't want to see us succeed. We have to step out of that frame, and we have to get gangstered out with self. Hey, I have to tell you all the great things about me instead of someone else doing it because I'm not Michael Jordan. I'm not Kobe Bryant. I'm not John Jones. You know what I'm saying? I have to do it. Because I've been that guy, it just was in a different time. And so now here we are today. A lot of people go back and recognize, I do it because this is what I enjoy doing, and I don't give a fuck whether they like it or they don't like it. It's what I enjoy doing, and I'm good at it because I've only worked with the best fighters in the world. And I have to tell myself that sometimes. I have to say, Antonio, you train Chuck Liddell, you train Rampage, you train Tyron Woodley, you train this guy, you train, I mean, the best have come to see you. And I have to ask myself, why? And that's what I would always get stuck. Why do they want me? I didn't realize how good I was at what I was doing because I was too caught up in what I was doing. But as you get older, you have to start timelining these things. And when you start timelining things, things all start to fall in place. But guess what? You don't have the physical abilities that you used to have. For that and the health and the wealth that I've obtained over the years and the hardship. But I had a lifestyle that most kids never made it out of. So I just look at it on the flip side like, oh, I'm getting it now. And the getting is even better now because I understand it. The kid that wakes up every morning to a mommy and daddy with breakfast and all he has to do is get up and go to school and then come home and do his homework and do his chores and then he can go outside and play and on the weekends he gets an allowance. What? I'm out robbing and stealing to get bus money. So a lot of times we take those things for granted. I haven't taken anything for granted except the failure to keep pushing me to go forward. I don't accept no for an answer. And when you say no, I didn't hear it. I just said, this is what I'm going to do. So, you know, it works on individual side, but sometimes on the team side, you are the one on the team that everyone hates. No one really likes Michael Jordan. No one really liked Kobe. Nobody liked the best stand alone. And it's very scary when you're the best because there's nobody there for you but you. And you wonder why they're arrogant. You wonder why they're alcoholics. You wonder why they're addicted to drugs. Because they're empty. They're empty. And so I found fulfillment in training fighters and doing it at the same time. And they can't say that I'm making stuff up or that I couldn't do it because I'm doing it with them. And their excellence is so high because I'm pushing them, and they see me at 50. How could you complain that you see a 50-year-old man doing what you're doing? And he don't even have a fight. He's just going through it with you. And not just you. He does it with anybody that has a fight. You got to give me 100%. There's no room for slack or failure. I'm not failing. I'm not slacking. So how can you slack and you're only 25 years old? That's not an option in my chance. Go somewhere else if you want to play that game. Because I want people who are like me, they want it. They want it because they know that if they don't get it, they ain't going to have it. Give me those guys all day long.
Mm.
And we'll make
it. I love that. I love that.
Get there as fast.
I think that's so amazing.
Well,
I mean, I just, I think it's amazing. I'm definitely going to do that. Definitely going to do that. 110%. I mean, you got me motivated right now. Because, I mean, the cool thing about it is, I mean, you're fighting, you're still competing, you're coaching, and then you also own a gym. I mean, how do you manage the day-to-day of being a business owner too? And I understand that you've opened up medical clinics. I mean, you've done a lot of different businesses throughout your life as well, and you still continue to do, you know, have a business as well. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, usually somebody just fights, and that's enough in itself to be a fighter, to be an athlete.
that's enough in itself. That's a whole ball of wax in itself. And a lot of people are just a trainer, because that, and I don't mean it in any negative way at all, downplaying that, because that's a lot in itself. But you're doing like hybrid, all these different things. How do you manage being a business owner as well? And the day-to-days with owning
really
a gym,
simple.
That must be a challenge.
No, it's not. Look, I'm ADD. If I wasn't doing this, I'd be bouncing off the walls doing something else. So listen, I'm ADD. And what I've figured out is I wrote a protocol for ADD children on how to teach them. But you got to have money for that.
Mm.
Okay? I can't do one thing and focus. I need to do three things at one time to focus. And I'll do it better than three people could do it individually. That's the beauty and the gift in being ADHD. At my level of it, I don't know other people's situation, but I know for me, I'm a hell of a delegator. I can sit, look at it. I've already visualized it. As I visualize it, I've already placed the people that I know as I visualize it, who would be good at it, who wouldn't be good at it. And by the time I get done and I get everybody together, I already know the positions that everybody's going to take, and I just delegate. I had all these stores, right? And I was working for this guy, and he said, "You are an amazing trainer." In fact, I was a partnership in the Crunch Family Fitness that's, like, now everywhere. I was a partner with this guy, and he was real slick. He was a slick guy. I ain't going to say his name. But anyway, I was a partner with him. Long story short, they opened up a facility in a parking lot where I have a gym, which was wrong because my contract in the gym at the time did not allow another gym to open up. But anyway, they opened up a bigger facility because you're talking about somebody paying $30,000 a month for rent, and I was only paying $9,000 a month for rent. So me and him got together. And he taught me something. He said to me, he said, "You know, everybody that I talk to loves you, and they love your workout. But you know how many clients you got just like that?" And I said, "Yeah, probably about a good 100. He says, "That's no money for me." I go, "What do you mean that's no money? I'm making $40,000 a month. What are you talking about? It's no money." He says, "That's no money for me." He says, "I want to make $100 million a month." And I go, "What? $100 million?" He goes, "Yeah." And he says, "I can't duplicate you. You can only work for me 8 to 12 hours a day, and after that you go home. You can't even duplicate yourself because people are not driven like you are driven." And I'm like, wow, this mother hit me so hard that I had to shut up and listen to what he had to say. And I sat there and I listened, and he said, "Look, this is what I'll do. I'll let you shut your gym down. I'll let you move into my gym, and I'll give you part of your ownership of this gym, and then you can do your thing in the back. And then I will later on show you a way to make some real money." And I was like, "What?" So my little $40,000 that I thought I was making, my little, you know, $500,000 a year, thinking I'm balling, that was nothing. You don't want to know what this man is making? I can't even tell you what he's making, but let me tell you this. He now owns over 15 gyms, over 200,000 clients at $9 a month on an average cost of $12 a month at 200,000 clients. Do the math. And every 3 months, he will slap you with an annual fee. Used to be $19.99, then it went to $29.99, and now it's $39.99. And 60,000 people every 3 to 4 months will pay $29.99 for that 1 year annual fee that's waived when you first sign up. Do the math on that numbers. Now I understand numbers. So I after such a harsh lesson, because after that I stepped out of the gym, I stepped out of the business with him, and I regrouped. I didn't get upset. I didn't get pissed off. I said, okay, there's only one way that I can make that kind of money, is that I have to have a team of people with me like he does. He will fire and hire your ass left and right. He doesn't care. He doesn't have emotions to people who work for him that are good at what they do. If they don't produce, he fires them and he hires somebody else. It is a non-emotional relationship. So at that point, I said, I don't want to be that successful. I don't want to be that successful because I always want to be able to help people. And that's the decision that I made. And I'm happy doing what I do. I love getting up every morning, going and training these crazy-ass fighters that don't even think that they're going to be anything great when I see nothing but greatness coming out of them. And then they're the best in the world, the Tyron Woodleys, the Rampages, the Tito Ortizes. When I see that greatness, I cling to that because I see me living through someone else that has it, that they have me here to help them. And that's why I've been successful in what I do and why my fighters are the best. and they're undefeated. And why my gym has the most undefeated fighters and why my gym has the biggest winning streak. Paper articles, no magazines talking about this. I'm just giving you this information to show you the passion that I have. It's not cockiness. It's not conceitedness. It's passion. It's raw passion that comes real from the streets. So if I don't politically correct, do it always right, I apologize. If sometimes I use profanity, I apologize. I didn't know I was talking to all kids listening group. But I just want to be happy, and I want to help as many people as I can. And that's what I believe my purpose is. People that live with no purpose, they have no reason to live. They're lost. They got all this money, and they're drug addicts. They got all this money, and they're miserable. Their wives can't stand them. Their kids can't stand them. Their wives are sleeping with a neighbor, and they're sleeping with their secretary. I mean, I don't want that. I have complete happiness for once. I understand who I am and what my mission is here on earth, and that's all I'm trying to do is be the best of that person that I can be and inspire others to.
Wow.
Bang, bang.
That's amazing.
What's up, G? You ready for some hope?
That's amazing. No, that's inspirational because, you know, finding your purpose is half the battle for most people in this world. Most people, a lot of people are lost in this world, and they don't know what the purpose is. And for me, I love
passion. I'm sorry.
Right.
I just had to interrupt you. I said they don't want to look at the ugliness of the truth. And the truth is, look in the mirror. Honestly, look in the mirror. I used to do this all the time. Look in the mirror and say, who am I? Who am I? Answer the question. The average person can't even look in the mirror because they don't even know who they are. And let alone they dare ask themselves, who are they? And when I look in the mirror and I ask myself, who am I? I say, I'm a child of God, and I'm a king, and I'm a creator, I'm a motivator, I'm a go-getter. And I get up, yeehaw! My wife thinks I'm crazy. But she wakes up every morning. She wakes up every morning with a smile on her face. And she just says, you know what?
Aww.
I just have to accept it. You are who you are. I wake up dancing. Follow me on Instagram, Antonio McKee. Follow her, beautifulsavvy_. And you'll see it because she posts it on her stories. And all her friends are like, man, your husband is so not amazing. I'm just happy.
And so do you get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning like Oprah? Do you get up like super early?
Hell
like
yeah.
You strike me as somebody like, oh, my gosh.
I'm up.
How do you do it?
By the time 7 o'clock, you know what? I am so pumped up to get up to get to the next day. I wish the days were longer. She thinks I'm crazy and on drugs, but I'm not on drugs.
That's hilarious. Does she get up early too? Does your wife get up early too?
Nah, she's a sleeper. She'll lay in bed all day until I come home from training, jump in the bed, smack her around a little bit, choke her out. But, you know,
she's like, why is he up bouncing off the walls at 4 in the morning? That's awesome.
When you interview my son, you ask him what he wakes up in, choke holes, and I'm on top of him, and I'm just hugging him and telling him how much I love him. I love you, son. I love you. Give
him
get off of me, Dad. That's why I want my own place. Get off me. I'm like, man, I love you. You don't even understand. Like, I don't even know what it's like to feel that way. And I just look at him and go, man, if you just knew my life.
I got to touch on this because you just brought up your son. So your son, I read, you know, somewhere that your son has always dreamed of being on the same fight card as his father, and that actually happened last year. Can you tell me about that?
Well, we told Bellator a long time ago. I said, listen, I'm still in great shape. I can fight whenever I want. I know I'm not your investment, but I got something hot. My son is going to be one of the best fighters in the world. They said, well, okay. Owner of Bellator came and watched him fight and said, I'll sign him. And as they saw him growing and me maturing as a person, they realized that they were onto something big. And so we gave them that suggestion and we did it. And you know what? It was really difficult. It was hard to fight. But then it was also knowing the McKees. This is how we roll. If I lose, you got to win. If I win, you got to win. End of the night, what happens? You got to win. You know what I'm saying? So me being the first fight and knocking my guy out, he says, well, I got to beat you. I got to knock my guy out in the first round. And he knocked out Georgie in 8 seconds, which was probably one of the fastest knockouts in the UFC. And not only that, that guy never been knocked. And you know what? That just
shows you when
the energy is right, that feeling, no one can take that feeling away from you. It's a very powerful feeling. It's like a woman giving birth. That man is a father for the first time. Hey. He'll never forget that. And so what if we harness that energy, that feeling, and we go and we do something that's on hand at task, demanding? Think about how much power you're coming with. And that's what I teach. I teach how to channel that feeling, that adrenaline, how to be successful with it and not let it gas you out. That's how I coach my guys. That's why we've never been tired. That's why we go. So if you want to get the rest of it, you got to
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I can't wait. I'm so amped right now. Like, I want to go to your gym.
Well,
I don't know about
what?
4
I'm
in the morning
right.
or 5 in the morning. Like, that ain't going to happen.
Okay, well, I'll get there early.
No, I don't know about the 5. No. I'm saying I don't know about 4 or 5 in the morning. I don't know about all that. Well, you know. But,
you let me know when you're ready.
All right, you got it.
You let me know when
you're
ready.
You got it.
I'm going to be there.
All right.
You got it.
But you know,
it don't matter.
We got to do boxing. Like, I swear to God, if somebody starts kicking me, all bets are off. I'm biting.
No.
I'm pinching. I'm pulling hair. I'm doing whatever. I'm in survival mode at that point. I strictly box. I don't do all that kicking stuff. I don't do all that.
Let me help you with this. To be the greatest, you take away your gifts that God gave you, and you embrace the things that you're not good at and get better at. People are always trying to be the best at this, the best at that. No, I don't believe in that. I believe in, look, okay, today I'm going to box with a boxer. I'm going to be better than the boxer, and I'm not a boxer. Tomorrow I'm going to do jiu-jitsu. I'm going to be better than the jiu-jitsu guy because I'm not a jiu-jitsu guy. I'm a wrestler. So, you know what I'm saying? I try to always.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
What?
Go ahead and finish what you're going to – go ahead and finish what you're going to say. Okay, so I got to ask you. McGregor versus Mayweather, MMA fight, who wins?
Man, come on. McGregor would kick ass. It wouldn't even be a fight. Remember, boxing is a sweet – let's not take away from boxing. Boxing is a sweet science, but it's only restricting you to throw your hand. A real fight, anything goes, and this is what we're doing. It's a real fight. There is no, well, you can only punch me. You can't throw a backhand. You can't throw a spinning fist. You can't even slap me. What? See, I understand and respect it because that was my first sport. But I'm more of, I like to get in there and do it all. I want to kick, punch, slam, elbow, knee, all of that. Those are all weapons. You're taking those away if you tell me I can only box. But it's okay because I become better at boxing when you take them away. And I have to box against the boxer. So that's why I don't have a problem with cross training.
Well, so that had to be kind of an adjustment, though, like a huge adjustment, though, for an MMA fighter to get in there with a boxer. Huge adjustment. Like, how do they turn it off? How do you turn off all your other weapons and just use your hands and just box? That had to be a huge adjustment for him.
That's what I'm telling you. That's the discipline. That's why there was no win for Floyd in that regard. You got a guy that's an MMA fighter that you wouldn't last 1 minute. Connor would break his ass in half in less than a minute. He went 10 rounds with you in your sport. How were you the winner? Yeah, you won, but that's because the punch volume is different. Now, if Connor would have trained with me, I would have had Connor ready for that. Connor would have went all the distance because there's a certain way to train for boxing. Boxing is a different cardio, and people don't know that. They think just because they can grapple, they're not going to get tired of punching. No, when you're punching in your ass and getting hit, it's a different game.
Yeah.
So, you know.
For sure. For sure. The running game, your stamina, all that stuff matters. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You're talking about a 50-year-old
big time.
Man that's been doing this shit since he was, 9, 12 years old. My daddy was a boxer. So fighting in the blood of the McKees, look at my son. 16-0. My other son, he's 2 years old, and he's already punching and kicking and grappling. So it's in the blood, you know. Some things are just genetics, and kicking ass and taking names in my family is genetics.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so with your son, do you feel like you get more nervous when he fights, or do you feel like you get more nervous when you fight? Because we all, anytime, I don't care if you're sparring, I don't care if you're fighting, we all get nervous when you get in there. Even though you're in kick-ass mode, you still are nervous. I don't care who you are. There's still a little part of you that your adrenaline is pumping. Like, so who do you get more nervous with? Either you getting out there in the ring and fighting or your son?
T, I hate to bust your bubble, but there is no nerves. And let me tell you why. You may think I have nerves like that, but I don't. And let me tell you something. Let me give you a good example of this. When a military man is in another world and he's fighting for his fucking country and he wants to come home, he doesn't have time to have emotion about what he's doing because he'll end up dead. He needs to be focused on what he has to do. Nothing else matters. If not, I'm telling you, he's the first one to get shot because he's worried about his wife. He's worried about his kids. He's nervous. He's not going to make it home. I go numb. Excuse my language. I don't give up. I know he's ready to destroy, hurt whatever's in front of him because that's the way he's been trained. He's been trained to do it. And there is no middle. You're going to put him out? I'm not wired like that. I was more of a strategic guy. But because of the pain and the suffering that I went through in this sport, I make sure that he felt my hurt. He felt my pain. And if you listen to his interview, he said, I'm gonna make people respect the last name McKee. Now, the problem is once he gets to that level and he's done it, where does he go after that? Because he's done what he said he was going to accomplish. That's when it starts. But as of right now, you're dealing with a maniac in a cage that sees one thing, eyes on the prize. There is no time for emotions here. There's no time for me to say, oh, well, I know we're ready. I've been training him since he was 5 years old for this shit. He's now 25. This has all been planned already. So there are no nerves unless his girlfriend is involved and he's not feeling so well because she's got him emotionally drained. Now I can say, yeah, I'm now nervous. Why? Because he's dead.
Oh, okay. So when he's not focused, if he's not focused. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
He's strung out on drugs. He didn't train right. See, as a father and a fighter, I can read him. I know him as my son, but I also know him when I'm training him because any good coach has an emotional relationship with their fighter, and they can feel and read the energy of their fighter when their fighter is in that cage, fighter's in that ring. And when you have that and you can separate that to get the job done, man, there's a lot of power in that. There's a lot of power in that. And that's, again, what I try to teach so many people. Everyone's all about the physical. What happened to the spiritual part? It's unseen but very felt. It's unseen but you can feel it. And that feeling gives you the edge over your opponent to go over and beyond. So why don't we train that? See, that's another level of training. People are all about the physical. I got to do 1,000 push-ups, run 10 miles a day, and train and push and beat my body up. No, how about some good nutrition and good spiritual training?
Thank you. Wait. Say that again. Repeat that again.
I said that's where spiritual and nutrition come in. Good training.
Thank you. You just said two key words. Thank you for saying that. Spiritual and nutrition. Those are so important. And, you know, I say that too. The nutrition part, that's where I come in. That's where that whole passion, that's where my purpose comes in. That purpose and passion. You know I'm about to go in and do some things. Oh yeah. Oh, we're definitely gonna talk. I'm gonna get your fighters right. I'm gonna get your fighters right on target with their nutrition because you are what you eat too. That's so critical. Whatever you put in your body, but I'm saying whatever you put in your body before you go in that ring is critical. I mean, you know that. You know that. I mean, have you ever ate something bad and actually, you know, and sparred or train and, you know, have you ever ate like fast food or anything like that before you train?
Yes.
And how does it make you feel? Do you notice the difference?
Well, I lost. That was one match I lost in CIM. I went and had some pizza and a 7-Up. I went and got that nasty-ass 7-Eleven pizza and a 7-Up, and I went out there and got my ass kicked. And it was, I ended up beating the guy later for the state championship, but he beat me for the year before because of that. And you were so right. I couldn't move. I was bloated.
Wow. See, I mean, it really does. It really does make a big difference. And you and I are going to talk. We're going to do some things. I feel like, make no mistake, you meet people for a reason. They come into your life for a reason. And, you know, there's
there's definitely a reason why we got connected, and I'm gonna help with the whole nutrition with your fighters, because you know you can't do it all. You're managing and you're delegating, but you can't do it all. Like you're training, you're coach, you're training for your fights, you're training your fighters, you know. And so yeah, we'll be talking for sure. So what's next for you? What's your next moves in MMA, business wise? What's your next moves?
Well, I'm gonna open up a juice bar. I've got these great juices of healing for diabetics, people who have high cholesterol, people who are lacking energy, people who are on the go, need to calm down. I have these drinks that I've been working on for the past 20 years, and I want to open up an organic juice bar and just have these juices. People don't realize how much good stuff is in this world because they're so consumed with fast foods and day-to-day quick scam, feed me, go buy, go home, get up, go. I mean, if you could just bottle up the good stuff and drink it, you wouldn't have to eat. You still need solid foods, but I'd rather you eat and drink this than go to McDonald's where it says, things here have known to cause cancer. And you buy it, and it's expensive as hell. When you can just go to my place, and you can get this juice, carrots, celery, peaches. I mean, I've got a variety of different juices and the healing properties of all these juices, and I will list them up on the menu. So if you're lacking sleep, this will help you sleep at night. This is a magnesium base. I mean, sometimes my brain is going.
Melatonin?
Too fast. Melatonin, yes. If you are having other issues and pain, I've got all these different drinks for these different issues, and I want these things to be accessible, and I would like to do a franchise. Why is there no franchise of good, healthy stuff to heal people?
You know, I always ask that too. You know, if I had an investor, and I'll just say it, I'll just blow it on air, I would want to have a fast food, but for healthy food. Like a healthy fast food where people drive through, but just get the healthy food. But why don't you do that with your juice bar? Have a drive through so people can go drive through and go. Because see, a lot of people don't stop at places like Robex or Jamba. Jamba's
right.
Really not that great for you anyway. There's a lot of sugar and stuff. Just not to downplay, but I'm just saying, you know, there's some good stuff at Robex. I like that place. And, I've never seen a drive-through with that, and people don't want to stop, get out of their car, blah blah blah. But why not make it? You know, you might want to consider that with your juice bar, doing a drive-through type of approach, because people are on the go. They want to get what they,
yeah.
You know, want to get and go. You know,
that
might be something
I
you want to think about.
I would definitely do that. I would definitely do that.
Yeah.
The energy in my place when you come inside, you'll know why you want to come inside. It's a feeling. Like when you come in my gym, you come in there and you could just feel the love. You're like, wow, this place just feels so good. I don't want to leave. People stay there. They don't want to leave because of the feeling that they get in there. That's energy. So part of the whole thing in my place is the energy inside of it. When you come inside, the colors, the chakra colors, these are colors of come inside. I want you to come in and go, wow, the music that we're playing, it's soothing, healing music. You're like, you know what? I want to stay here and do my report. And I'm going to go in the back.
Mm.
I'm going to have an area where people can just go back. I'll have a waitress that will come up. Would you like anything? I mean, I've got it all mapped out in my head. And if it makes money, it makes money. But I tell you what it will make. It'll make people happy. It'll make people feel good because this is the type of place it is. I've been to some places like this. They're amazing.
I love that. That's so cool. You know, I had that kind of feeling. I kind of like closed my eyes when you were talking about it. And I felt that same kind of feeling. There's a little place in Copenhagen that was so beautiful to me. It was just, I went in there and I felt this zen. I didn't want to leave. I was in Copenhagen, Denmark,
right.
Which is where my family
mm-hmm.
is from. And it was just such a happy place. Just the energy in the room, I could just feel it. And I closed my eyes right now and it's taking me to that place. And that's really cool. I see your vision and I think I'm going to definitely be there. I'm going to go to your gym. Actually, no, I'm going to go to your juice bar, get juiced up. And then I'm going to go ahead and go to the gym. I'm going to put in a good workout. And then I'm going to go back to the juice bar so I can get my melatonin drink, get my Z's,
mm-hmm.
and then go back. Now, you know, I could see it. I could feel it.
Well, you know, we're running out of time.
Okay.
Hey.
Well, just know,
oh, 100%. 100%. I'm with it.
You're in there like I
am.
Oh,
go ahead.
We can explain these things. We can explain these things and why you need this and why you don't need this. Now, we can't guarantee we're going to heal anybody. Your body will absorb this, like beets. When you do raw beets and you fuse raw beets within 20 minutes with alkaline water, do you know what that does to your system? A supercharge. Trust me, I do it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Beets.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
water.
Yeah. I had
I can't give up.
Oh, yeah, you got to have that alkaline water because that alkaline water will hit the bloodstream real quick. It'll stabilize the levels in your body, and boom, it hits you right away. Anything with alkaline. Alkaline is amazing. That is amazing, anything with alkaline, really. But I want to thank you so much. I could talk to you for days because you're so interesting and so full of amazing information and energy. But we're running out of time, so – can you tell everybody how they can follow you on social media? It's pretty easy. Can you tell everybody how they can follow you?
Everything is Antonio McKee. At Yahoo is my email, Antonio McKee on Instagram. My page is private. Good at accepting people, so if they want to check it out, they can. And just follow my son's amazing journey as he wins this $1 million in this tournament for Bellator, 145-pound division. He's 16-0. And, you know, my wife, who's an amazing trainer, she does videos every day on training and being in the house and not being able to go out. You can go click on her, beautiful_savvy, and you can see all her stuff she does. Like the whole McKee family, we really need a show. We're off the hook over here. And you know what? I want to thank you for just taking the time and giving me a platform to speak and be open and honest about my journey. I want to thank you for allowing me to do that. I can't say how grateful I am for that. And I just, you know, I'm going to send you some roses or something, but I am so grateful and honored to be on your show. I don't even have the words for it. I'm trying to figure it out. But I just want to say thank you. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time out because you're super busy. And I didn't realize that your wife is into fitness too. I think that's so cool. Especially right now, too, with the fact that, you know, being at home, being stuck at home, you know, social distancing and all that. This is a good time for her to roll out those videos right now. I would love to promote whatever she's doing as well because right now is the time. That's awesome. I want to know all about that.
Yeah, go ahead. Go on her page. If it ain't me acting crazy,
I'm going to definitely go on her page. Shoot, I might be doing a couple of her workouts here soon cause in the house.
Hey, she'll kick your butt. That'll be your graduation. I'll be your graduation.
I believe it. Well, and I look forward to having your son on my show, too, at the end of April. But thank you so much again for being on my show. It means so much. And you have a good evening, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay, take care. Thank you.
All right, ciao for now. All right, everybody, you just heard it. What an amazing guy, Antonio McKee. I love his story. I love his energy. You know, tonight's segment, I was going to talk about immunity boosters as well in my nutrition segment, but he's so interesting and so cool. I just had to get his story out there. I hope you guys enjoyed the show tonight. I'm going to go ahead and post a blog next week about immunity boosters that you can do and good groceries that you can buy out there if they're on the shelf. Actually, a lot of people are not touching the produce out there, surprisingly. There's a lot of really good things out there that you can pick up off the shelf to help boost up your immunity so that you can fight off diseases and arm your body with good stuff to prepare yourself, your immune system against this war against COVID-19. All right, you guys. So, my next show is going to be, the first, Thursday in April. And I'm going to have Dr. Batiste from Game Changers, plant-based doctor. He's actually a cardiac doctor and, he'll be talking about plant-based diet. So definitely check that out. And then in the latter part of April, the third week of April, I'm going to have, Antonio's son on my show. Hopefully he knows it. I don't know if his dad told him yet.
But anyway, AJ will be on my show and toward the end of April, and I'm so looking forward to talking to his son as well. Anyway, y'all, I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite rappers in the world, MC Light, and with Escape. This is some motivation to keep on keeping on. Fight that virus. Be healthy. Be safe out there. Thank you all for listening. And here's MC Light.
Never ask how was it, never speak my